Gates ist mir gut.
Danke.
Wunderbar. And that's as much as I can go. Well, today is the temple is holding its pet memorial service. Are there any comments or questions that you may have around this or other topics? If not, I wanted to share a short story. The first real pet that I had was a stray dog. It looked really, really hungry, so I fed it part of my lunch, and then it just followed me home. And so, as a lot of little kids would do, I asked my parents if it was okay to keep the dog, and my parents were very, very reluctant. And they said, well, okay, if the dog stays, then you can take care of it. And so the dog was never given a collar or a leash. So the very, very free. It was able to come and go as it pleased. But fortunately for me, the dog decided that it would stay for a while. So I was able to, well, we kept the dog basically for about 2 years before the dog wasn't there anymore. We're not sure why, but he just disappeared all of a sudden. The name that we gave the dog was John John, which wasn't too easy for my parents, because when they called me, the dog would come sometimes. But part of the reason for giving the dog that name was because I at the time was playing baseball with the CYC, and there were two Johns on the baseball team. And I got the name John John because I was the younger of the two. And I didn't want to be John John. I was John. So I named the dog John John when I got home. But because it was a stray dog, it wasn't always the most friendly. It was very, at first it was very, very timid. And so it wouldn't allow you to just go up to and pet it, for example. And so gradually over time would try to build the trust of the dog by leaving food out, by feeding the dog. Eventually was able to have the dog sit and put out a paw before it was able before I gave it anything. So that's how far we went. There are times when we tried to, well, because it was a stray, my parents didn't want to spend all that much money for the dog. And so at first, we were only allowed to buy the cheapest dog food that you could get, which is Skippy. But the dog wouldn't eat it. And so I was wondering why the dog wouldn't eat it. And so being a child, I figured, well, if I eat it and the dog sees me eating it, maybe the dog would eat it too. And so I took a scoop and I put it in my mouth and, oh, it was terrible. And so I figured, oh, maybe because it's not cooked. And so I got a Sterno and I cooked a little bit and I ate it and it tasted even worse. So that's when I told my parents, you know, we can't feed the dog this. I tried it. It's terrible. And so my parents allowed me to buy a little better grade than the cheapest Skippy, and the dog was able to eat that food. It must have been very, very scary for the dog at first to want to come to me despite whatever feelings that I may have had for the dog, of wanting to feed the dog, take care of the dog, and so forth, and so on. And so, as far as my intentions were concerned, they were very, very, I'll use the word generous. But I don't know what kind of experiences the dog had in the past, and so regardless of how generous or pure my heart may have been, the dog was always very, very timid at first. Over time, however, because of all the different things that I did, that the people around me also helped out with, eating dog food, for example, the dog eventually learned to trust all of us. And so we were all able to eventually pet the dog and so forth and so on. The reason why I wanted to share this example is because I think this is similar to what we might experience in our trust in the vow of the Buddha or Namu Amida Butsu. It takes a lot of courage to trust, to entrust, to have faith in something. It's not always the easiest thing to do. There's typically a lot of doubt in our hearts. Is this really true? Am I not going to be burned by this later on? Hopefully, as we continue to experience the working of the vow in our lives, we are able to understand just how sincere, genuine, generous, compassionate, wise the vow of the Buddha really is. It is, of course, our choice whether to accept or not accept, but hopefully everyone in their experience with the vow is able to determine for themselves that the vow is indeed true and real. And because of this, led Shinran Shonin to say things like, the powerful condition that is the wise promise vow is very difficult to meet even in many lives, because that's how many lifetimes we may need to have in order to entrust the faith that we have in being able to entrust in something like that is difficult to achieve even over innumerable kalpas. But now that we have been fortunate enough to be able to hear and receive this working of the Buddha and the heart that of ours that can entrust, Shinran Shonin tells that this is something worth rejoicing over, and hopefully that is the kind of thing that we are able to discover in our lives. Having pets allows us to see things more from the perspective of the Buddha. Many of us, I'm sure, have felt or do feel that we will do anything for our pets without our pets even having to ask. If we took it as a responsibility upon ourselves to go to and receive the pet into our lives and our hearts, and like the Buddha, we discover that our lives cannot be separate from what it is that we have originally took responsibility for. And so hopefully, as we hold these pet memorial services, we are able to also consider the larger picture of the relationship between myself and the Buddha, and how that relationship can inform me of what kind of relationship that I was able to share with my pets. And in that, hopefully to be able to lower our heads to our pets as not only friends, but even friends in the Dharma who have helped me to appreciate all the more what it means to be able to hear, say, and receive Namu Amida Butsu. That's the kind of thing that I always think about whenever we hold pet memorial services, and it's something that I really appreciate participating in. Well, that's my story. Any comments, questions on this or other topics of interest? The Academy Awards are today. And I can't comment on it because I haven't seen any of the movies that are nominated. I don't even know what movies are nominated. Thank you. It's good to see you. It's good to see everyone. Next week, because of the BCA National Council meeting, there will be no one able to cover Venice. There won't even be a minister at Gardena. But because of the new minister assistance that Venice has recently helped to be certified by the Office of the Bishop, there will be a Sunday service next Sunday with your two ministers' assistants leading the service.
Do you have any thoughts regarding seminar one yesterday? How it you saw?
Seminar one is the seminar that was held by the junior YBA, the high school age groups that the temples sponsor. They held their seminar. They held three seminars a year. The first seminar was held at the Gardena Buddhist Church, and I was asked if I had any thoughts on it. I thought it was a very, very good seminar. I was caught by surprise a couple of times, however, during the services. Opening service, they asked me how we should, if they could hold the service and so forth and so on. And I consulted with Miyagi Sensei. Miyagi Sensei said, sure, but it would be nice if we could give a greeting because we're hosting the site. And so I told him that the resident minister would like to greet everyone as part of the opening service. But for whatever reason, they decided that I should be doing the greeting. And so when they mentioned that, I said, whoa, when did this happen? Guys, that's what was supposed to give the greeting. So I went up and greeted everyone. And then at the end, I was told that there was only a 15-minute service. And so there's only basically time for the chanting, and if you wanted to say thank you and goodbye, we'll give you the time for that. And I said, oh, okay, that's nice. But when they announced what was going to happen, they said I was going to give a Dharma message.
And you did a good job.
Oh, thank you. And apparently I did a good job. Yes? The theme was based on High School Musical. What was the actual title? But around that theme, they had three workshops, and the three workshops were based on impermanence, gratitude, and sangha.
And
No, this is a Southern District thing.
Well, this is the Southern. So I thought
Gardena just hosted it.
Oh, so now Southern District?
No chapter.
So
volunteer.
No chapters don't?
No, there was no chapter that volunteered to do
seminars. Oh, so Southern District
did it, and Gardena hosted it.
Southern District, probably the board. Then.
Yes, the board.
Oh, yeah.
The ministers were not actually involved.
Right. So there was a Southern District advisors that helped out, and that would have been Nakata Sensei, who gave the keynote.
That's very interesting.
Yes, he's a very interesting guy. Now, one thing that I thought that they overgeneralized is the way they define Sangha. They basically define Sangha as just any group, that any community. Any group that supports each other. That's not accurate. A Sangha is a type of community. And the type of community that Sangha represents is a community that supports each other in their pursuit of enlightenment. So it's not just any functional community. It's not any friendly community. It has to be a community that wishes to preserve, maintain, study, pass on the Dharma in order to become Buddhas. That's what a Sangha is.
He was explaining how it had changed the meaning during the different periods of time.
Right, right.
And I thought he said at the end that it meant strictly a group of monks.
He was saying that the rhythm, use of the word Sangha, was like a federation.
Right.
But then that term was then used by Shakyamuni to refer to his community. And what they were protecting was not, borders, but the Dharma. And so that's how it was moved to that particular community.
To make it more religious type.
Yes, yes. But then with the advent of Mahayana Buddhism, the boundary became a little blurred. Because you didn't have to be a monk. And a monk is someone who has decided that they would abandon the world to pursue spiritual truth exclusively. But that was a very, very narrow definition, and Mahayana made the definition bigger to include all of us. Now, Jodo Shinshu is the school that really blurred the lines. So in Mahayana, for example, even in Mahayana, you had to declare that you take refuge in the three treasures before you are allowed to consider yourself part of the Sangha. Have you?
But we would be considered part of the Sangha.
Yes. So as Jodo Shinshu, all you gotta do is hear Namo Amida Butsu, say Namo Amida Butsu, and you can claim, yeah, I'm Sangha.
So you're saying that Sangha, the line of Sangha, can even further within the context of Seminar 1? Or that's the way that...
Sangha still points to a body of people that have... that have a desire to hear, maintain, and pass along the Dharma. So that part of the definition hasn't changed.
But in Seminar 1, the junior YPA...
They overgeneralize and say, and just said, if you got a bunch of friends, then you guys are supporting each other, then that's a Sangha.
Yeah. I think
Right. So for them, they're defining Sangha as any community. So like, so then when they saw the music video, High School Musical, so when the kids were out dancing together, goes, yeah, that's a Sangha. No, it's not. Those are a bunch of Disney actors and actresses dancing.
That was the key point they missed then.
I think they got it. But they just didn't express it. Because they're talking amongst themselves, and so they're saying, you know, we support each other, so we're a Sangha. So they've assumed, I think that they've just assumed that they were at a temple.
Oh, okay.
And because they all came for the Dharma, they just assumed that. But it wasn't expressed. It was they didn't word it correctly. So if you were coming from the outside and just heard what they said, then you would think, oh, okay, any community is something.
Right.
But that's not quite right. And that's where Jodo Shinshu kind of blurs it. For example, the Fujinkai making sushi. There's nothing ostensibly religious in that activity. Especially when you go yelling at each other, say, yeah, what are you cooking wrong? Is that in the middle? But because it's done in support of the temple, because it's done at the temple, the hope is that people will be able to reflect on what it is that's happening. Why am I getting so upset? Why am I arguing about, this hasn't happened here, but I was told this happened other places. Why am I arguing about whether it's 5 sesame seeds or 3? Well, because you know, Millicent's over time will grow into like a dime. And then to fight over something, it's not necessarily trivial, because it does kind of represent the temple, the kind of attitude that you want to show everyone. So it does reflect the temple, but so does yelling at someone for not doing it quite the way that you expected them to. So hopefully these become experiences that help us to understand why there was a vow made to save sentient beings. Because fighting over something like that is not wise, but it does show us who we are. And in that reveal, if we are, especially because we're doing it at the temple, reminded to say Namo Amida Butsu, then that becomes an activity of the Sangha. So the potential is always here. Any and every experience can be transformed.
Mm-hmm. What about family?
What about family?
Is that because I guess they're united most of the time, or practically by bondage, compassion, or emotional ties, blood ties,
uh-huh.
Then they have their ancestors and their rituals related to, say, a funeral or a certain day and birthday to celebrate kinship. As I understand it, the Sangha, I understand the way that it's said here. How can it loosely be applied? because I've heard sometimes other people say, oh, you know, there's a sangha there. I guess I understand it strictly in the sense of, you know, following the Dharma and the teachings.
Right, right, right. As long as there is Dharma, then it can be considered Sangha. But Sangha is not meant necessarily to define any particular group. It's meant to define the whole body. So in your description, it might be more accurate to say that family is a part of the Sangha, as opposed to calling that family itself a Sangha. Although, it is.
Oh, I see. So a family, let's say, can be a part of the...
It can
be a microcosm, part of a larger Sangha.
Yes,
that
yes.
That is the ocean.
Right, right, right.
Within, like... I guess I mentioned it because there's a concrete unifying theme a lot of times within the family. That's I made that example as opposed to a very loose community of people that where it might be hard to find what is the unifying kind of.
Right, right, and so for family is a word that can be used to as a rough synonym for Sangha, but the family is unified by Dharma, not by blood, culture, circumstance or whatever. Which is difficult because a lot of times it's very easy to go to a temple and see how it is. You could easily conclude that the unifying element is custom, culture. And that's an easy trap to fall into. Which is why every now and then you hear someone say, this is not a cultural center. It's not a cultural center, but it's not a cultural center.
Because norms and customs a lot of times are culturally based, and there are so many cultures around the world. There's division, but a Dharma is very universal.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So, for example, the example of sushi that I gave, the temple is not a sushi factory. although if you look at the quantities that the temple makes several times a year, you could conclude that it is. but it's. It does do that, and it's very easy to see that, okay, I can go and do sushi, but that's not the intent. Sushi can become the tool through which the Dharma expresses itself. And when it does, that's when the temple stops looking like a culture center and becomes a temple, a place of Dharma. And Dharma is not meant to be separate from what we would call non-dharma. The dharma is meant to help us live our lives, not just within these four walls, but our lives in its entirety. And that intent is reflected in the ritual of entering and exiting. Entering into the temple and exiting.
Oh, sorry.
So you would enter with your left foot and you exit with your right. To be constantly reminded and being mindful of how the Dharma is meant to help us live our lives in its entirety. So, by doing those things that we would consider mundane, here is helping us to learn how to see the Dharma in the things that we do outside of the temple. The Dharma, and Nembutsu in particular, was never meant just to be done on Sunday from 9 to 10:30. if you Daniel Shonin, for example, wrote a very beautiful phrase. Netemo sametemo inochi aran kagiri shomyo nembutsu mosubeki nari. Whether one is asleep or awake, as long as one has life, one should utter the nembutsu. So it's on all the time. In the past, I thought that was just a wonderful expression, but you could say the nembutsu in your sleep. I traveled with one of my teachers to China, and that was a terrible trip. We didn't know that you were supposed to bribe everyone to get around. And so we ended up getting abandoned because the we couldn't get tickets to get, well, we already bought the return flight tickets, but we couldn't get past the gate because we didn't bribe the ticketing agent. So every time we went to go get on the plane, we were told, oh, we're sorry, your flight was canceled because it broke down. And then we saw another plane take off. And we're going, I guess that was someone else's plane. But we later found out that that's the only airplane that flew in and out of where we were going to. So how come we can't get on and everyone else is getting on? So he finally figured out, oh, you're supposed to give money to this guy, you gotta give money to this guy, you gotta give money to this guy, then they'll let you on. Buying the tickets only greased this part of the wheel. Okay. And so while we were stranded, we were scared. We thought, are we good? We ended up, where we got stuck was Tongko, what's it in English? The desert area of China where the caves are. We got stuck there. And so we thought, are we going to be stuck in this desert forever? And so we got kind of scared, and the teacher I ended up being the roommate of, in his sleep, he would say Nembutsu. Just to be like, Nam-manda. But at first I thought he was just doing with his eyes closed. And then Nam-manda. Oh man, this guy's asleep. So, then I went out and got everyone's, hey! So then we all, wow, it's true, you can't say Nembutsu in your sleep. I doubt that I do, but... but he was someone that just lived the Nembutsu so deeply that it just comes out. Even without a consciousness. This teaching is meant to help us to give us a framework through which to be able to fully appreciate and live our lives. That's the point. Not just to decorate, but to help us to examine, experience, and grow from each and every experience in our lives. There's nothing richer than that. The present that we're being given ultimately is our lives. And in being given that present, we are told that it is immeasurable, inconceivable. That's the kind of gift that we have already received if all we do is open our hearts to see it. Stuff like this, doing the pet memorial services, is one way that we're helped to appreciate that. And I wanted to thank Lauren for her comments about her cat. Oh, I'm sorry. Was it you? Well, maybe I shouldn't have done that, but anyway, the reason why I wanted to say thank you is because it reminded me why it's important to say itadakimasu. Because put in that way, it's very easy to see, oh, animal. But basically, I'm doing the same thing. I'm just mindless of it most of the time. So leading up to the Academy Awards, they did this, I think ABC did that, like 13 movies that changed this American cinema. And one of the movies was Jaws. I'm more Jaws than Jaws. I had another teacher that was talking about our relationship between animals and food, and he asked the question, if animals were really placed on this planet for our consumption, why do they try to run away? And he said, isn't this an indication of the animal understanding and wanting to preserve its own life? And if an animal is working that hard to preserve its life, isn't it trying to help us to see just how important and precious this thing that we call life really is? And then for us not to appreciate that we had to take and receive life to maintain my own, that's, well, he didn't use his words, but a crime. So that statement on the card reminded me of all those things. I was very lucky in the education that I received in Japan. I was able to meet a lot of fantastic people. So thank you for reminding me of one such meeting. Because we can get so caught up in our daily lives that we can easily forget something that monumental.
which is part of the reason why our past has given us something as grand as the temple. To try to keep us from forgetting or being mindless of all the gifts that we have received that make this moment not only possible, but rich. I'm sorry, I forget what the schedule is supposed to be. Wow, didn't I experience this yesterday? Huh? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. That movie I watched. Yep. I've seen all the classics.
Yeah, so maybe I can get caught up in stuff like that. Because I was just thinking, yeah, there's got to be more.
There isn't. But it's not as paltry as we may imagine it to be. And to remind us of that is part of the reason why in the Jewish sage, the Dharma Hozo Bosatsu promises to be the great giving, to be called the great giving king, so that the Buddha can save all those who are suffering and impoverished. That's the line that you say that goes. Gao Muryo Ko Fui Daise Shu Fu Sai Sho Bingu Sei Fu Jo Sho Gak. So the Bodhisattva has promised that when Bodhisattva becomes Amida Buddha, that the Buddha will constantly give so that no one thinks that they're impoverished. What am I getting? What have I gotten that keeps me from feeling that? Doesn't rain money from the heavens, and I don't see my bank account growing any time I say Namo Amida, which is so well. how am I being kept from being impoverished? Buddhism is in a lot of the poorer parts of the world. Where is the giving there? Is it not happening? And so, the riches that are being described for us, that we are being told is given to us, is not material. And so what is it that can replace the material things that could keep us from feeling poor?
Being grateful for what you have, your life, your family.
Yeah, those are all irreplaceable. But because we in the back of our minds know that it's part of us, given to us freely, we just take it for granted. And because we do are able to do that, that's one of the reasons why we feel poor.
It seems like me, I remember my grandfather was always saying that, during the day, anything, any time of the day.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that's how we live. And when you compare their lives to ours, they really didn't have material things.
Right.
But they were happy. And if you don't have the material things, then you're not afraid.
Well, you don't need it.
The more we have, the more it seems like we have to have even
more. Right, right. They know. They knew that they didn't need it because they didn't have it,
yeah.
And they're still okay.
Yeah.
But that, I think, that's the huge problem with the huge challenge for religion in this world.
Yeah.
The way that I describe it is, we have taught ourselves to need what we want. Religion is trying to help us to want what we need. Because we tend not to want what we need. But we take it for granted. We assume that we have it already, so I want the stuff that I don't have. Right, right. Well, it's like our attics and garages. If we needed it, there wouldn't be an attic in the garage. But we don't want to let that go either. And some of the stuff that we keep, and the temple just constantly shows it all the time. Because when someone passes away, the kids, they don't know what to do with all the stuff that their parents had, and so they just send everything to the temple. It does help the temple because the temple tends to rummage the stuff off and becomes a source of revenue for the temple. So it's not valuable. But when you see the way that the family tends to bring the stuff, it's like, oh, we don't know what to do with this. And so, please let me let go of this. And so it shows you just how different the way that things are seen over time. For example, one of my treasures is all the books that I have. And part of the reason why I see them as being such a treasure is because, well, what's in the books, which is why I bought them in the first place, but then thinking of how hard it was for me to save enough money to buy the books that I have. And so even if I've only opened the book once, and it's unlikely that I'll ever open it again, I am not going to give that book to a bookstore or a used bookstore because that's my book. And I would hope, for example, that Sean or Jean would want to have the book to be able to open it up and study later. But I know they're not going to. So what do? I hope they have grandchildren and that their kids my grandchildren would want to study it so that it can be handed off to them. But I'm hoping that someone will find value in that so that I don't have to let go of it 50 years down the line. That's crazy. But if you've seen the books in the bookshelves, it is impressive. So for now, at the very least, it allows me to come home and going. Yeah. But ultimately, the stuff that's in the books is probably priceless. But if no one's going to read it, it's just taking up space. I don't know.
I'll be on the line. There'll be no more books in the future.
Well, most of that stuff probably will not be copied over. It's just too specialized. Well, I'll put it this way. No one's working to preserve it electronically now.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure. Because a lot of the books, some of the books that I have been out of print for years. And people are still looking for some of those books. And a couple of books have a huge premium on them. Well, but if someone wants it then that badly, then that means they can use it. For the most part. I open it every now and then. Yes?
So you said that if someone really wants it, you would tend to say, oh wow, so this person is going to bring it back. Is that what you said? No.
Yes, but not now.
Because you're still finding use in the world, yourself.
I'm still attached to it.
Oh, so, yeah.
I'm not a Buddha. this is funny. The and I'll end with this. The other day, one of the Gardena, I was running around, and one of the Gardena members said, "Hey, you didn't bow at that time when I passed by the thing." And so I said, "Yeah, I don't stop at all the stop signs either." What's your point? but it was done in a comical way. But there is a point, because if you don't stop at stop signs, you're putting yourself in undue danger. Not being mindful is putting yourself in undue danger. The more we practice being mindless, the better we get at doing it, and the easier it gets to do. To the point where we will have taught ourselves how to forget everything, including just how wonderful it is to have been born. We can go to that extreme. Many of us have. And to keep us from doing that is why the ritual makes a point to say, whenever you pass in front of Renyo Shonin, Shinran Shonin, Amida Buddha, bow. Because what they have helped to preserve and pass on is humanity, one of humanity's treasures. Don't neglect it. And if we can just come in and do whatever, then
we will no longer, it's possible that we will no longer be able to appreciate that. Which is why some ministers in particular are very, very strict. If you don't have tokudo, you don't go up here. Period. To help us be mindful of how the Dharma has been transmitted and preserved over generations. It was because individuals took the responsibility of making sure that happened. And we don't want to forget that. I'm sorry I lied when I said that the last joke would be the end. One last bit of trivia, and I mentioned this before, there's a reason why these service books are red or reddish. It's to remember the sacrifice made by one of the Hongganji priests when the Hongganji caught on fire. The temple was ablaze, and in their haste to get out of the burned temple, they left one of Shinran Shonin's original manuscripts behind. Renyo Shonin tried to get back in to get it, but when someone stopped him and said, no. Someone tried to go in to retrieve the text, and Renyo Shonin stopped the person and said, no. It's unfortunate, but it's too late. But someone else ran in to try to recover the manuscript. He was caught in the fire and never made it out. So when they went to go back in to find him, they found him curled up in a ball. And he was holding tight to something. They're going, what is he holding on to? And so when they unfurled him, they saw that he had slit his stomach open. And when they looked inside, they found the manuscript inside his body cavity. And because of that, his body and body fluids protected the manuscript from being burned. And so the original manuscript was saved. But when they pulled the manuscript out, it was stained in his blood. And to remember that sacrifice that he made is the reason why these service books are covered in this color. So that we would remember some of the things that happened, just to make sure that we had this.
While one of the ministers, recalled one of them back, trying to practice non attachment, let it go, you don't want to endanger yourself.
Right. Right. They were both right. Because that text is irreplaceable. We're very fortunate now that print technology has advanced to the point where we don't need to print stuff anymore. this color of the service book is remind us of those kinds of things that had to happen in the past for us to even be able to meet with these teachings. So I'll bite my tongue and I'll stop. But thank you all very, very much for coming. Part of the story of the transmission includes the deserts of China. But we'll leave that for next time. So we'll end with Gassho. Namo Amida Butsu. Namo Amida Butsu. Namo Amida Butsu. Thank you very much. Please come again next week. It'll be a wonderful treat for those of you.